Welcome to the Riverside Church Podcast. Riverside Church is a community of believers striving side by side for the gospel in the greater New Orleans area. For more information about Riverside Church, go to riversidelife.org.
Chapter 23 through 27 is kind of the focus of where we are, but particularly more of the focus, chapter 23 through 25 is where we are this morning in a sermon titled Faithful to the Next Generation. I don't know how much you know about General Patton. I learned a lot about General Patton, George S. Patton, from World War II. I learned a lot about him because my Western Civ teacher in eighth grade at Rummel loved Patton, so much so that we watched the movie Patton, and he often carried himself just like General Patton with the hat and everything. Patton said, "Always have a man trained and ready to take over your job in case you are killed. The test of your ability is whether you can be killed and nothing would be lost." That's a bit of where we are in the storyline of Genesis as we enter into these chapters, that the promise had been given to Abraham, this promise of an offspring, this promise of dwelling in that land, that this land, this promised land, Canaan, was going to be an eternal possession for them, and that they would dwell in that land with their God forever. He had received this promise. And so in Genesis this morning, we see kind of bookended in Genesis 23 and Genesis chapter 25 are two funerals. I read about one of them a second ago with Abraham, where he died full of years. We see in Genesis chapter 23, another funeral. We see the death of Sarah. And in between this, we see the marriage, at least the finding of Rebekah for Isaac to marry. And what we see going on is this question, as this generation, the generation of Abraham and Sarah, go to their graves, will something be lost? And will the promise die with their generation, or will the promise go on for generation to generation? Will God continue to provide, and will his promises be found to be faithful and true? And in fact, this is a question we must ask all of ourselves this morning if we are following Christ by faith, because the Bible says in Galatians that we are children of Abraham and heirs according to the promise. And so I want to challenge us with this morning as we look from this promise being passed from generation to generation. I want us to consider that as well. I've shared with you this before from Psalm 71, what some call the prayer of an old man, that goes like this: even to old age, Psalm 71 says, Psalm 71 verse 18, even to old age and gray hairs, as we see Abraham and Sarah this morning, it says, he prays, "O God, do not forsake me until I proclaim your might to another generation, your power to all of those who come." It's a bit of context for us this morning. That's what's happening, is this promise is passing from generation to generation. This is a key turning point in the narrative of Genesis, of this generation passing on, and will the promise go with it? Abraham was 137 years old here at the passing of Sarah and his wife. There is probably some doubt, some pain, some sorrow. Will there be comfort? Will there be offspring to carry on? Because Isaac is not married at this point. Will the promise of the land and the blessing carry on? What do we do with all of this? So in chapter 23, the death of Sarah, and 24, the wife is found for Isaac, 25, the death of Abraham. Here's the main goal this morning: that we will, looking particularly at Isaac and the Lord's patience and faithfulness to ensure the promise to the next generation, and perhaps we will even see this morning, here's what I'm driving at this morning, how we as Abraham's offspring can live faithfully in our generation for the sake of the next generation as we wait for the promises of God to be perfectly and completely fulfilled. Kind of a long statement there. Here's the main point. God is faithful from generation to generation. How are we to live that we, like Abraham, die well and full of years? Can Abraham die? Can we die and nothing be lost, that the promises of God still stand? That's what we're going to make a run at in Genesis 23 through 25 this morning, because this is more than just a story of two funerals and a wedding, though it is that. It's about how God is faithful to his covenantal promises to bless nations through this lineage. And it's about how Isaac finds a wife, but more particularly, we can see how we can walk faithfully as we walk in the promises of God. Because these Old Testament biographies and scripture are also written down for our instruction, that we might learn from them. And so that's what I hope to see this morning. Big picture, God is faithful to fulfill his promises. How do we walk in that? Like, what does this look like for us this morning? First, I want to give you two kind of core convictions that we see in Genesis chapter 23 that we need in our lives if we get to the end of our lives full of years, passing the baton from one generation to the next. If you want to live and die in full of years, here's a couple of things we see from Abraham. Some of his example in chapter 23. Look here. Now Sarah lived 127 years. These were all the years of her life. She died in Hebron, land of Canaan. Abraham went in to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. Listen to this. When Abraham got up from beside his dead wife, he spoke to the Hittites. He says, "I am residing as an alien among you. I'm a sojourner among you. I've been here for years and years, but this land is not my home at this point. I'm a resident alien among you. Give me burial property among you so that I can bury the dead." Here's what Abraham's running into. He's going through this loss of his wife, and he's going through this deep sorrow and mourning, and he's making these arrangements of how he's going to bury his wife. And in this moment, as we often do in trying times like this, I think Abraham's reminded that this world is not his home. That he's still a sojourner in this land, that he was still a stranger in a foreign land, literally at this point, that he was living in Hebron among the Hittites, and even though he had been promised land and the offspring would call this land their own, there hasn't been a fulfillment of that promise yet. They're there, but they're still sojourners. I think a conviction that we must have if we are going to live faithfully and faithfully pass the promise from one generation to the next, I think we have to have this core conviction, brothers and sisters, that this world is not our home. If we start seeing this world as our home, then we're going to struggle. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 9 through 13, talking about Abraham and Sarah and all these folks, as these all died in faith, not having received the things promised. Not because God was not faithful, but because they had not seen the full realization of those promises yet. They had seen them and greeted them from afar. They acknowledged that they were strangers. Hebrews 11 helps us interpret this. The best way to interpret the Bible is with the Bible. Hebrews chapter 11 tells us this, that they saw themselves as strangers and exiles on this earth. For people, verse 14 of Hebrews chapter 11, for people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country. A heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. They were greeting these promises from afar, not yet seeing them fully fulfilled, so much so that even at the point of the death of his wife, he does not even own a burial plot at this point, for Abraham was a sojourner in this land. I think there's this core conviction that we must have, that we are exiles on this earth. So what does this mean? That means our values are different. Our focus is different. Our treasure is different. The way we spend our time is different. The way we radically and sacrificially love one another is differently. Nothing is ours and everything is ours. We seek a city, an outcome that only comes by faith and only possible through the promises that God keeps. So we live and we trust. We live as strangers and exiles on this earth. This earth is not our home. What better reminder of that is when death comes. Abraham considered himself an exile on this earth. There's something else that we see from Abraham, this second core conviction that I want you to see from Genesis chapter 23 in the life of Abraham. That's an example to us so that we also might walk by faith and not by sight. Yes, this is a story of two funerals and a wedding, but I think there's something much more than that. It's about the faithfulness of God. That's the big picture that we're seeing here. God faithful through generations, but how do we walk in that we live as exiles? But there's something else that we see about Abraham here and this promise that God's made that I don't want us to miss this morning, that though we are living as sojourners, as we're living as exiles on this earth, we are living with hope. And we see that with Abraham. We're starting to kind of see this in seed form here, I believe, that so these two core convictions, we are sojourners, but yet we live with hope, that here in this moment, even in this grief, we see as Abraham goes and he makes this proposition to those who own the land at the time that, hey, I'm going to pay full price for this property. That by the end of this story in Genesis chapter 23, as Abraham goes and makes this offering, say, here's how much I'll pay for this property. I want to pay for it in full. By the end of chapter 23, it says the field with its cave where Sarah was buried passed from the Hittites to Abraham as burial property. God was fulfilling his promise. Now, the offspring owns. It's only a burial plot, but it's in the land of Canaan. That God's being true to his promise, and this is true for you and I as people, as folks who are the seed of Abraham. This is true for you and I even this morning. We have the hope that the meek will inherit the earth, that sojourners will finally arrive home, that this earth will be renewed and we will dwell with the Lord forever. And right now it just looks like what we own is not much, that we're sojourners and all he has is this burial property, but that is a sign that God is being faithful and one day all of this will be theirs just as he had promised. And so they're seeing this from afar. We're still strangers. We're still aliens, but God is giving us a glimpse of glory. So we're living with hope that God who began a good work with this burial plot in Canaan will one day give us everything and the meek will inherit the earth. This land doesn't belong to us, but it will. And when it does, Sarah's body will be resting in it, and Abraham and others would go on to be buried in this plot of land because they're living with hope. And so he buys a piece of real estate, a graveyard. He's a pilgrim, but God is fulfilling his promises. He's keeping his word. So he wants Sarah to be buried in this land. And I really believe that what's starting to unfold in this idea of living with hope is not just, it is that God will redeem all of creation and he will give us the land and we will rule and reign with him forever. I really think in seed form, there's this living hope that they're living in of resurrection. That I really think that one of the reasons that Abraham wants so desperately for Sarah to be in that land, because he believes that the promises do not end at the grave. I really believe, because we see this, let the Bible interpret the Bible in Hebrews chapter 11, that Abraham has learned something over the course of his years. that he knew when he was bringing his son Isaac to that mountain to offer him as a sacrifice, Hebrews chapter 11, he supposed that even if that knife were to drop, that God, in order to be faithful to his promise, would raise Isaac from the dead. He's living in this hope of resurrection. And by the way, fast forward to Joseph. Joseph even said, hey, bring my bones back to the land when I die in Egypt. I really believe that they're living in this hope of the resurrection, that the promise will not stop with this generation, that what God promised, he'll be faithful to. And though all we have right now is a graveyard, one day these bones will raise up in the promised land forever, because God has promised that to his people. That the offspring's possession of the land begins in a burial cave. I think it sounds a little familiar. That we see the first fruits of the resurrection in Christ, and from that burial cave comes this hope of resurrection that we too will be raised to life. Sarah's tomb cried aloud that death had no power to destroy the promises of God, that the grave cannot undo the Lord's covenantal word. Abraham has hope, so he buys this burial plot. The hope that this land will be theirs, this hope that I think at least in seed form, this hope of resurrection, that the bones bore witness that the Lord still had work to do in the land. May that be said of us, that we would believe like this, with this sort of hope, that when we stand around and someone stands around us, this is not the last they'll hear of them, for they too will be raised to life at the return of Christ, when this whole world is resurrected, and we too will be resurrected and enjoy this hope that we have. We see it from afar. It's not yet here, but we know the promise is coming, that all of this will be redeemed and restored, and we will be redeemed and restored with it. And so we live for that day. And because Christ lives, we can face tomorrow, we can face our past, we can face whatever, because we know the best is yet to come. Abraham was looking forward to a city. We're looking forward to a city coming down from heaven itself. And even though we're watching and waiting, even though Abraham's watching and waiting, he considered the one who promised to be faithful. So he lived with hope. We must have these two core convictions. If we are to be faithful with the promises in our generation and pass the promises to the next generation and commend the kingdom, the promises don't lie upon us. It's he who promised is faithful. Yet we're called to commend these promises to the next generation, that our lives speak to the promise. If we want our lives to speak to the promise, we must live as sojourners and we must live with hope. So those two core convictions I think we need to carry through our lives. With the rest of the time, I want to list for you maybe how does all of this work out as we live as hope, as we live as sojourners. How do we get to Genesis chapter 25, dying full of years? Here's the last thing I want to do with you. I have 8 things that I see in Genesis chapter 24, and maybe you'll see them as well. That the way of hopeful sojourners, wanting the next generation to know and experience the blessing of God. What does that look like? Because I think we see the outworking of that in Genesis chapter 24. Yeah, so what happens in Genesis chapter 24? That Abraham sends a servant. But I think even in this servant, we can see him reflecting his master Abraham. And so we kind of see him walking in faith as well. Abraham sends a servant, Eleazar, maybe. I don't think he's mentioned here, that he sends this servant back to his native land to retrieve a wife for his son, Isaac. And so there he goes to the land in order to retrieve a son for Isaac. And can you imagine? So what does he ask? Do you just want me to pick one? How does all of this work out? There are some cultural and contextual difficulties here of what's going on. But at the end of the day, I want us to see how Abraham handles this situation, because Abraham's dying and Isaac doesn't have a wife and the promise for offspring. So how does all of this work out? Here's how I kind of thought of it. Anybody build a snowman this week? Some of you built a snowman this week. I'll never be able to use this example again in my life, probably, so I need to use it now, right? But we're leaving our house this morning, and all that's left of the snow in our yard is this pitiful, wet wool hat that once stood atop of three balls of glorious snow and two lumps of coal and a carrot, laying there in a little mound of ice. You have something like that in your front yard right now? Some of you do. And it made me start thinking about this next generation that sometimes we come across like this, that, man, I can tell you a story about that snowman, right? I can tell you a story about when me and my kids got out there and we were, it was difficult, it was hard work, but we built this snowman. It was glorious, and you would not believe how wonderful this day was, and all the snow that fell, and all that was happening that day, the joy and the trials and the struggles and the drying of the clothes and in and out, wet and cold, and the fire and all this stuff that we experienced on that day. And all we have is this coal and this little hat. And sometimes I wonder if that's a little bit of us as we pass the good news of the promises of God to next generation. We remember the past and we remember how glorious it was, but we're not like actively living in the moment to recall how glorious that was, but actually walk in that glory. You know what I mean by that? And I know that illustration falls apart because we don't get snow every day, right? But I think that's a little bit of us, that we have these glorious memories and there's these vague memories and these poor depictions of what remains, but we wonder, how can we get back to those days, and how can we live in those moments again? And the truth of the matter is, we have to keep being faithful in this generation to build whatever the Lord and work and whatever the Lord might have us doing. For him, it was finding a wife. That's what was going on here. And yeah, it might not look like a snowman. It might remember those glorious days. But what does the Lord have for you to follow faithfully in the days and years and months to come? How will the Lord guide you in the days ahead? We see several things from Genesis chapter 24. See eight things. One thing I think we see in Genesis chapter 24 is Abraham sends his servant to go find a wife for Isaac. That Abraham is sustained by the faithfulness and patience of God. That we might not read this directly in Genesis chapter 24, but we see that God is faithful to his promises. That he does have a son named Isaac. He does have an heir of the promise. Doesn't have a wife to pass on that promise from one generation to the next at this point, but we see that God has been faithful to this point, and we know this, that God has been patient with Abraham. How many of you, looking back over the course of your life, could say that God has been patient with you? I'm terrible at being patient. You're probably terrible at being patient as well. Our patience usually involves eliminating difficult situations rather than learning to be patient. Often the problem with being patient is there are difficulties that you must be patient through. We get so angry at the slightest inconvenience, and here is God being patient with us. And much less, he is patiently working all things together for good. For all that love him are called according to his purpose. God has been patient with Abraham. He's been patient as he's hung his wife out to dry several times, passing through foreign lands. He's been patient with Abraham as he took on a servant in order to try to take care of what needed to be taken care of under his own ideas and taking matters into his own hand. God has been patient, so patient with Abraham that he's here at this point. How many of you could look back over your life and tell the next generation, God has been faithful and patient with me? Let me tell you how. Let me tell you how God has been patient with me. Let me tell you how he's been slow to anger. Let me tell you how he got me to this point. The sin that I committed, how unfaithful I was, and how God had been faithful to me to get me to this point, to the point that I sit here today. Abraham is sustained by the faithfulness of God. We also see something else about Abraham as he sends his servant out to find this wife for his son so that the promises of God can pass from one generation to the next. That not only is Abraham sustained by the faithful promises and patience of God, Abraham is trusting that this faithful and patient Lord will provide. He says, go out, swear an oath to me, and take a wife for my son from the daughters from the Canaanites among whom I live. Not from among whom the Canaanites from whom I live, but will go to the land and take a wife for my son Isaac. And Abraham said, make sure that you don't take my son back there. The Lord, the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from my native land, who spoke and swore to me, I will give this land an offspring. He will send his angel before you, and you can take a wife for my son from there. If Abraham's learned something over the course of his years, even as he once took Isaac to the top of that mountain to offer him as a sacrifice, and God provided the ram in the thicket, Abraham is trusting that just as God provided in the past, he will provide for him again. So he sends him out, sends his servant out, says, go find a wife. The angel of the Lord will go before you, and you will find a wife for my son Isaac. Abraham has learned to trust in the provision of the Lord. Can you look back at your life, even to this moment, seeing how the Lord has provided? There's something else we see of Abraham here, and even through his servant, as he reflects his master Abraham, we see that Abraham is sustained by the faithfulness and patience of God, that Abraham is trusting that the Lord will provide, and we see that Abraham resolves to act, but he refuses to compromise. If we are to faithfully pass the promises of one generation to the next, we must be resolved to act. I will go find a wife, but notice what he says, he refuses to compromise. Abraham had compromised before when he took Hagar to be his wife in order for Ishmael to be born, going around what the Lord had promised. Here he says, I will not compromise in this generation. Don't take one from this land, from the Canaanites, but go back to my native land and find one for Isaac. Why is that? It's not an ethnic thing, it's a spiritual thing. And don't take a person just to get married. Just so we have offspring, find someone who worships as we worship, who worships Yahweh as we worship Yahweh, because what's important is that that person is following the same one that we are following. I am not going to take matters into my own hands. Not anyone will do. He resolves to act, but he refuses to compromise. So he sends his servant back to the land. If we want to be faithful to the next generation, we must do the same. Number four. We start to see this with his servant. Look at verse 12. So the servant goes, trusting that the Lord will provide. Here's number four. We must be dependent upon prayer. Lord, God of my master Abraham, the servant prayed, make this happen for me today and show kindness to my master Abraham. I'm standing here at the spring where the daughters of the men of the town are coming out to draw water. Let the girl to whom I say, please lower your water jug so that I may drink. And who responds, drink and I will water your camels also. Let her be the one you have appointed for your servant Isaac. By this I will know that you have shown kindness to my master. Now this is not necessarily saying this is how you find a wife. Go to the, see who will water your camels for you. It is saying, be dependent upon prayer. The servant goes and says, I'll find someone here. The angel of the Lord goes before me. He prays. God, even show me some specific signs. Help me to see what you're doing, because I'm not really sure how to do this. I'm in a foreign land. I'm supposed to come back with a wife, and I've been given all these goods and all of this wealth in order to bring this wife. I don't know what to do. So, God, just give me a sign. That's sometimes it's okay to put a fleece out. Say, Lord, show me. Like help me to see. Even I think what's going on, the character of this woman. Help me to see her hospitality. Help me to see her humility. Help me to see what you want me to see. He is dependent upon prayer. And then there's something else I believe we see, that not only is he praying, but number five, we are to watch for the providence of God. Look at verse 15. Before he had finished speaking, there was Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, son of Milcah, the wife of Abraham's brother Nahor, coming with a jug on her shoulder. The girl was beautiful, a virgin. No man had been intimate with her. She was sat down to the spring, filled her jug, and came up. And the servant ran to meet her. He said, please give me a drink of water. And sure enough, she offers to water the camels as well. The servant sees this. He'd been praying for this. And now God provides. I think if we're going to be faithful to pass the promise from one generation to the second, we are faithful in prayer, but we're also watching God. Show me how your hand is orchestrating all of this. And so I want to ask you, we need to ask that, like, do you recount that to the next generation? Do you tell the next generation, let me tell you how God lines up my life for me? Like, when I was living it, I couldn't imagine that God would do this, that God would put all of these pieces into place so that I would meet this person, that I would have this job, that I would go to this city, that I would wind up in this place in this particular way. But I was watching, I was praying, and sure enough, wouldn't you know, 20 years later, I was able to connect these dots. Yes, for this servant, it happens like right then, right there. Boom. He's praying for these things and it happens right. That's incredible. And that's what we all want. Like, it happened real quick. But sometimes it takes 20, 30, 40, 50 years for us to start connecting the dots of how God's providential hand is carrying you about. And he sees it. The hand of God. Do you see the hand of God in your life? Number six, look at how he responds in verse 26. So he sees the providence of God reflecting his master Abraham, verse 26. Then the man knelt down low and worshiped the Lord and said, blessed be the Lord, the God of my master Abraham, who has not withheld his kindness and faithfulness from my master. As for me, the Lord has led me on the journey to the house of my master's relatives. And so notice how he responds as he sees the providence of God. He worships the Lord for his provision. Just as Abraham had worshiped the Lord for providing the ram in the thicket, now his servant worships the Lord for providing this wife for his master's son, Isaac, and God had worked all things together for good in this moment. Are we teaching the next generation that when we see the Lord's provision, when we see the Lord's providence, that the proper response is to worship and to thank God for what he has done? There's two other things that we see as we close out is as he worships, then I think there's something else that we learn is he retells the story to those who were involved in the situation to confirm that indeed this is what the Lord is doing. I believe we see, if you're numbering these, number seven, that he works this out with other people. Like he asks other people, like, here's what happened. Like, Rebekah, do you see this? Laban, did you see this? Are you agreeable? Do you see what the Lord has done in orchestrating all of this? So we're to be faithful. We need to do it in the company of others. And the final thing we see is their obedience. The Lord had it. So Rebekah leaves. She goes. She marries Isaac. And it says that Isaac brought her into his mother's tent, took Rebekah to be his wife. Isaac loved her. And he finally found comfort after his mother's death. So what do I want you to know this morning? What do I need to know? What do you need to know this morning? That as we look back upon Abraham's life, as this promise goes from one generation to the next, will you live with these two core convictions that you are a sojourner, but we are people with unbelievable hope because we serve a resurrected Christ? Will you live with those two core convictions? And will you live walking with the Lord, trusting and planning and refusing to compromise, acting and praying and watching and worshiping in the company of others? And will you obey and will you follow? Who is behind you? And can people look at your life and say, man, the promises of God are glorious. Look what you've done in that person's life. Will we walk in faith and not by sight? Will we pass and commend the kingdom from one generation to the next? Will we look forward and we watch and we wait and we long and look to see what the Lord is doing in our generation? That we wouldn't just point to the past, to a snowman that has since melted away, and there's still some signs of what has happened. But we'll be thankful for that day. Look forward to another day and say, God, what will you provide in this day? It might not be snow for a snowman, but it might be something else. And I will walk faithfully, and I will follow, and I will build, and I will commend the kingdom to the next generation. Let's pray that that would be so.